This is the Final Straw Radio, and I'm Bursts of Goodness. This is the second half of the former prisoner panel of the 2016 North American Anarchist Black Cross Conference. During the hour, you'll hear words from Sekou Kombui, Daniel McGowan, John Tucker, and Kazi Toure. These will be prefaced by some introductions. Sekou Kombui is a former political prisoner who survived 47 years of incarceration. Throughout the 1960s, Sekou participated in the civil rights movement, organizing youth for participating in demonstrations and marches across Alabama, and providing security for meetings of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, or SCLC, Congress of Racial Equality, CORE, and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC. Sekou became affiliated with the Black Panther Party in 1967 in Chicago and New York. While in Detroit, he became a member of the Republic of New Africa before returning to Birmingham. Back in Alabama, Sekou coordinated community organization activity with the Alabama Black Liberation Front, the Inmates for Action, IFA, Defense Committee, and the Afro-American People's Party in the mid-1970s. Sekou was also a soldier in the BLA during these years before his capture. In 1975, Sekou was falsely arrested and charged with the murder of two white men, a KKK official from Tuscaloosa, and a multimillionaire oil man from Birmingham. There was absolutely no evidence against him, only coerced testimony from individuals who subsequently recanted their statements. The judge refused to allow the recanted statements to be stricken from Sekou's record. Sekou continued to fight through this time in prison. On June 30th, 2014, Sekou was released on parole. Daniel McGowan is an environmental and social justice activist from New York City. He was charged in federal court on counts of arson, property destruction, and conspiracy, all relating to two actions in Oregon in 2001, claimed by the Earth Liberation Front, or ELF. McGowan was facing a minimum of life in prison if convicted when he accepted a non-cooperation plea agreement. His arrest is part of what the U.S. government dubbed Operation Backfire, a coordinated multi-state sweep of over 15 activists by the federal government who have charged the individuals with practically every earth and animal liberation action in the Pacific Northwest left unsolved. Many have considered this roundup indicative of the government's Green Scare focus, which has activists being arrested and threatened with life in prison. Many of the charges, including Daniel's, were for crimes whose statute of limitations were about to expire. Daniel was released from prison on December 11, 2012. John Tucker. John Tucker was one of five anti-fascists arrested in May of 2012 after an altercation between white supremacists and anti-fascists in a Chicago suburb of Tinley Park that left 10 injured fascists, three of which needed hospitalization. The case of the Tinley Park Five received an overwhelming amount of public support, despite the fact that the meeting was organized by violent white supremacist organizations like the National Socialist Movement, Council of Conservative Citizens, and Ku Klux Klan. The state showed their cozy relationship with white supremacy by refusing the accused anti-fascist activists bail or a plea deal comparable to any other criminal defendant in Cook County. In January 2013, the Tinley Park Five accepted a non-cooperating plea deal. John Tucker was released in February 2014. As of September 2014, all of the TP5 are released. Kazi Toure. As a member of the United Freedom Front, Kazi was imprisoned for his role in 20 bombings, combating apartheid in South Africa, and United States imperialism in Central America. The UFF has been called, quote, undoubtedly the most successful of the leftist guerrilla groups of the 1970s and 80s, unquote, and struck powerful blows to South African Airways, Mobil, IBM, Union Carbide, and various courthouses and U.S. military targets. Toure was convicted on federal charges of possession of firearms and seditious conspiracy, conspiring to overthrow, put down, destroy by force, and violence the U.S. government. He is one of few, if any, new Africans to be charged of this act. This audio will air soon as a radio episode.
Cool. Well, let's get started. Does anybody have any questions for the panelists?
With the overall talk tonight being about supporting political prisoners and those that are doing their time, how do we address the fact we live in a place that doesn't even acknowledge the fact that they do have political prisoners? how do we, because it's a lot about support, about being able to spread that word, to grow that base of support. Having been in that position and the benefit that you got from getting that support on the outside, as those of us looking to provide that support, what is the way, with the technology and things we have available to us now, like we want to grow that base, like how do you see us being able to do that? Like, it's more or less drawing attention to the fact that we live in a place that doesn't acknowledge that they do have political prisoners, that they do hold people in captivity for their political beliefs. How can we, I guess, help to further the people that are in those positions?
What was that last statement?
What can we do, or what do you see as our responsibility, I guess would be the appropriate term. What is our responsibility and what can we do, I guess, more immediately to bring more attention to this?
This is Sikuo Kumbui.
First and foremost, I'd like to point out something you said in the beginning, that no one acknowledges in this government acknowledges that there even exists political prisoners. But if you and I allow them to define the reality that exists for us, then we're not going to do nothing. We have to define for ourselves our own reality based on our own understanding, based on our own experiences. We have to cultivate relationships with people in the community who are like mind and like spirit, and who is willing to recognize the need to pool their resources. You know, when I was in New York with Daniel and his comrades in NYCABC, they were having letter writings and putting together birthday cards. And, hey, I'm thinking of you. And, you know, so you organize letter writing campaigns in your community. You know. You do fundraisers to raise resources to support you in your endeavors, but also to allow you every now and then to pick 5, 10, 15 prisoners that you're going to be communicating with and send them a few dollars. You wouldn't know it, but it may save their life.
This is John Tucker.
One thing about the mail, has been spoken of before, the mail as it comes in the large packets, like the that draws a lot of attention. While the outside world may not view the people on the inside as important or as politically active, being able to show the other inmates, the other people that are incarcerated, the people on the outside do care about these situations, makes a world of difference on the inside. And 90% of people that are incarcerated are going to go home. So the more people you can, you know, show that this is a reality to on the inside, whenever they go out, that's people that it's real to them on the outside world as well.
This is Kazi Tori.
Also, I think, you know, I think just like what Brother was saying, you know, like inviting people and getting in touch with the prisoners, the prison will direct you also on what to do and what they need. But we definitely have to make them a household name, you know, throughout. They have to be, and we have to build an organization, you know.
This is Daniel McGowan.
I'll just say that my goal is definitely not to convince the U.S. government that there's political prisoners, right? Like, it's just, that ain't gonna happen, and we don't need to waste our time. But I think what everyone said so far, I totally co-sign. Especially the fact that, you know, and maybe in some of the language I've used, I don't want to put forth this idea that this is like activity you do on behalf of someone, right? Like, these are individuals with agency and autonomy, and there's a lot of direction and ideas that could come from the people that are facing it themselves. Although I obviously focus a lot on mostly, I would say, elder political prisoners, getting them free. I do work on this project that the National Lawyer Guild in New York City does, called the Parole Preparation Project, and they essentially only work with people that have life sentences, putting forth parole packets, helping people get their lives kind of organized before they go to the board. So when they go to the board, they're showing, look, I got housing, I got this, I got that, I got this. And, you know, they've been around like 2 years, they have a very good success rate. Like, their success rate, although it's, you know, 60 people, is like 50%, which, like, if you're what they call an A1 lifer in New York State, you got like an 11-12% chance of getting parole. So there's a lot that can be done in terms of just working with people inside to help them get free, whether it's through parole, probation, whatever, any of that nonsense, or, you know, lawsuits and such. But I do think contacting people that you might have a certain affinity with, you know, that's how I started writing. It was like, I was writing someone that had like politics similar to myself, but was a little older than me. I had a lot of respect for at the time, and sort of it went from there, you know. Thank you.
Any other questions?
My question is for John specifically. All of you up on the panel there, you were the youngest when everything happened with you. The rest of these guys had a sort of legacy, a reputation that went along with everything. They may have been already known. You didn't have that. You just had groups like ABC in this. Like, how do you feel things would have been different for you had you not had ABC? How did it go differently for other people that you saw in your situation that did not have things like these groups?
People lacking support on the inside, this is specific to the places that I was incarcerated at. Cook County was the worst of them, along with the NRC. People that lacked support on the outside world, along with a poor political, basically internal structure. Oftentimes they fall victim to gang predation, just being exploited by people that are gaming the system. They're a little bit older. Correctional officers could turn them into all sorts of lackeys. People that lack support without a strong structure tended to founder on the inside. Had I not had that support from the ABC and whatnot, especially the National Lawyers Guild, things probably would have gone a bit different for me. I probably would have been a little bit more involved in the politics than I would have liked, especially with my particular place in those societies. Probably would have been a much more violent stint. So, yes.
I'm just wondering, with the ongoing prison strike, if there are any updates you could give us, given your contacts on the inside, and also any suggestions about how we can support what's happening right now.
This is Sekuo Kumbui.
I have received numerous phone calls. They blow my phone up, Free Alabama Movement, that those who are participating in the strike are still engaged. What they're doing locally around Alabama is their families and friends are putting together rallies and events and coming together and educate the community about the conditions in prison and why they are protesting and why they are demanding respect for their human rights. You know, one of the fallacies of being incarcerated is that you're not recognized as a human being. And as such, you're treated any kind of way, and they feel that they can do so with impunity, and they do so with impunity. Why do they get away with it? Because people in the community, some of us have been victims of some very indescribable crimes. And so we're angry, we're hurt, we're frustrated. Why help him? He abused me, he didn't respect my humanity. But you know, we're still human beings and we are still subject to error. But we're also able to correct ourselves, make adjustments in our attitude and our ability to interact with other people in a more respectful, understanding, and courteous way. I know you know that. And the reason I know that is because you didn't think those of us on this panel who have been incarcerated have not demonstrated that we're capable of being respectful, kind, understanding, courteous, and conduct ourselves in a mature, adult fashion. How would we have your attention? Why would you even be here? So you undoubtedly is able to recognize in us the capacity for being a decent person. There are those who are incarcerated who also have that capacity. And they deserve your support. They deserve your understanding. But that cannot be a healing unless you're willing to forgive them, their ignorance, and the things that they may have done to be abusive and disrespectful of you, and they're going to prison. You know, we don't like to talk about forgiveness until it's us facing the heat. Then we want to be forgiven. We had a governor in Alabama once, he's an ex-governor now, and he implemented the three strikes you out kind of law in Alabama. And he insisted that the parole authorities implement, lock them up and throw away the key mentality and attitude and approach in dealing with incarcerated people in Alabama. But some years later, he was busted for criminal mischief. Now they didn't call it criminal mischief, they called it something else, but that's what I'm calling it. And now he's in federal prison, and every day he's been there, he's been begging to be forgiven. He's been begging to be released. And so I said to myself, this is the same one, said it was okay to lock us up and throw away the key. But now he don't want the key thrown away. He wants out. He wants respect. He wants to be treated as a human being. Someone said not long ago that, what are we going to do here in America? And while everybody's looking around trying to find a fabulous solution to the problems, let me share something with you. You're looking in the wrong direction. In order for us to solve these conditions that exist for us in America, we have to look within first. Clean up our own hearts and minds and spirits. Be appreciative of our own humanity. And if you can love yourself and respect your own humanity, it shouldn't be too difficult respecting those who are in most need.
This is Daniel McGowan.
Oh, I just want to say about the strike that I write a few people in prison, but no one like in areas where the strike is popping. But I will say that I visited former Black Panther Jaleel Muntakeem at Attica, actually on the anniversary of on the first day of the strike and the anniversary of the 45th anniversary of the uprising. Sorry. And I have to say the environment at Attica that day was sick. It was so, like, the tension in the air was so palpable. And I asked the person that I went there with, is this the norm? And he says, well, you know, sometimes they get comments made to them. They didn't say anything to us this time. But it was like, you can cut the tension in the air with a knife. And it's like those people at Attica were on eggshells that day, like they didn't know what was gonna happen. And you know, they had like a hot dog and hamburger sale, I think, to fund the Attica Museum, which is this like podunk little shack across the street to commemorate, you know, the poor guards that got killed or whatever. But I will say that I've mostly been a cheerleader about the strike. I've been like reading about it and trying to plug into the stuff about like retaliation against the people that are striking, and I get pretty much my information comes from It's Going Down or sites like that, Mask Magazine. Thank you.
This is Sekuo Kambui.
I'll share something with you in reference to the brothers incarcerated. He said, hey, Sekuo, this is Terry from Montgomery. I got to talk to you as soon as I can. It's urgent to get back with me. Black Lives Matter. call you when I can. We're going back on lockdown. A correction officer just got stabbed in the neck pertaining to the inmate being caught getting back in line to eat. Black Lives Matter. In the afternoon, Officer Beatus here at Holman Prison has died from the past incident involving an inmate trying to get in the serving line again to eat. His charges will now be murder, upgraded to murder instead of the original charge of attempted murder. Will it be a capital charge? We don't know as of now. Case still pending. Wake up, wake up. The riot team is here tying up shit. I'm going underground with this computer. I'll get at you folks when I can. Peace. Him and other members of the Free Alabama Movement generally blow up my phone with messages of providing me with information about what they're doing. And so when we walk around the country and talk around the country, we share that information. And we encourage people to be open-minded and reach out. Okay, yes, it's Alabama, but so what? They're striking all over the country. So reach out and be supportive. Give them your support. How do you do that? Writing letters. Writing letters, petitions, and calling your legislatures. Demanding changes in the prison system that provides more humane environment for those incarcerated. You wouldn't know it, but a phone call to your local legislature goes a long way. Put something on his mind. It generally is a bad. Letters to the prison commissioners and other people involved in prisons like parole boards, and you know, write them and voice your feelings about their way of interpreting their parole laws and refusing to release people, warehousing them for the sake of the dollar. Prison is big business, and these days we define the prison experience as a prison industrial complex. How many of you are familiar with the military industrial complex and what it represents? Well, the prison industrial complex is no different. It's all about the money. They are making big money selling beds and arresting your sons and daughters, mothers and fathers to fill those beds. They have a quota to reach for big business. You have to define reality for yourself. Stop allowing others to manipulate your thinking and influence you in a negative way. Those of us who've been sacrificing our lives across the years, sacrifice those lives for people like you. Out of love and compassion and understanding, because we are part of you. We've been a victim of the same injustice, the same indignity, the same poverty, stricken communities, the same children grow up in poverty, live right next door, live in our own homes. Human trafficking, mass incarceration, all equal genocide. But mass incarceration always also destroys family relationships, family lives. That's why we need those fathers and mothers home, so they can be the right model for their children, so they can get their children off the street, so they can teach their children the fallacy of being ignorant and living an uncontrolled life. You know, when I go to prison, my family goes with me. My friends go with me.
Hey, Kazi, you mentioned that your comrades John Longman and Tom Manning are still in. Also, I was wondering if you were interested in maybe giving an update about what's up with Jan and Tom these days.
Jan
I can tell you more what's happening with Jan. He's still like in non-communicate. I mean, like they're letting some of his letters in. I got a letter from him yesterday, but it was dated like the 29th of September. And he told me he had just received one from me, but I had sent him like three in between, you know. I think they're still messing with his mail, and they still they still got him knocked off the internet. But it's got a lawyer working on it, you know. That's about it, man. And I'm not sure what's happening with Tommy. Ray's, I haven't talked with Ray in a couple, you know. He said something a minute ago that, like, that I thought about a lot. Like, when I was inside, if everybody that was out here went and spent any time in jail, right, in any of them camps, with the thought that you know that you're not gonna get out, like, in, like, 10 years or so. If you stay there 2 weeks, you will come out and be organizing and mobilizing to shut them things down. To shut them all down, you know? If you really knew what was going on in there, you know? So, I don't know, you know, it's like really, we could talk about stories and stuff, but I don't know. Do people really have to go and have that experience, you know, for themselves, or can they learn from other people's experiences? You know, we can sit up here and tell you, you know, like what it's like, and you're gonna believe it or not. And then if you believe it, then you're gonna go out and you're gonna start organizing. You're gonna tell your people, you know, we gotta shut them things down, man. You know, because they're just torturing people. My brother, I got a brother that's been in 45 years since he was 18 years old. You know? These people talking about second chances and shit. They ain't giving nobody no second chance. You know? Any other questions?
I can just follow up on that. I'll go out on a limb and guess most people here are on board with that. What can we do to start organizing to get those things shut down? I mean, we know talking to the government isn't going to change the thing. Right, or legislator, but you know, good luck, Chuck, on that, right? What can we actually do? Short of breaching the walls.
This is Sekuo Kumbui.
I mean, all I can say, man, is, you know, like, you gotta keep doing whatever has to be done, you know, to shut them down. And so, like, it's like you try one thing that don't work. Don't keep doing that. Do something else, and just take it up higher each time, you know. Until you strike a nerve, or you strike a chord, then you'll get a response, and the motherfuckers will be like, you know, what's happened? These people are moving on us, you know. Fucking right, we're moving on you. Let our people go.
So kind of in regards to that, I feel like the popular message among the left right now is that political endeavors should be pursued in a very non-violent, civil methodology. And amongst all of you up there, I was surprised at how much violence there is in your histories and why you were incarcerated as you were. Do any of you regret the violent aspect of the history? Like, do you think that should not have been done? Like, that was not a way to go about doing this?
This is Sekuo Kumbui.
Look, man, you know, you can ask somebody else. I don't feel like that, you know? Look, this country was born on violence. They brought us here, they killed the Native Americans, they swapped, they, you know, like, they annihilated them. There was under a million of them left when they put them on the reservations, you know? And they brought us here in the bottom of them ships, you know, just like that fucking airplane I got off, man. I think they designed them seats like this, but slave ships, you know? They had us packed in there like sardines, man. You know, but I mean, look, you know, this is America, right? You know, and I mean, Trump, look at what Trump's doing. And they cleaning this shit up for him, you know? Because this guy ain't anything but that black man. Get him the fuck up out of there, you know? Shit, you know? It's like, man, come on. This is America, man. Let's keep it real.
This is John Tucker.
We don't have to. It's good that we do, and we should look back hundreds of years, look at the history of slavery and slave ships. But you know, here in 2016, conditions in America are such people young, old, in between. Red men, black men, brown men being murdered every day. Are those acts of violence? And I spent 47 years because I was accused of murder. But what is happening to the police that are going around the country killing our mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers, even grandmothers, even babies? Getting away scot-free. I don't know what Scott means, but getting away scot-free. Not a blemish on their record. Fire them from one job and move them to another one of the same kind, in another precinct, another city. But here, us incarcerated, recently freed, can't get a job locally. Forever punished. We have petitions now in Obama's office challenging him to abolish the 13th Amendment. Ban the bots, programs, and there's an agenda going on around the country. People are signing petitions and pushing letters demanding that the bots that you sign on your job application that says, have you ever been convicted of a felony, be banned, removed. So people can get a job. How can people stay out of prison if you don't give them a job and let them work? They don't have no options open to them but to return to a life of crime, even commit acts of violence. If you get hungry and there's no food to eat, if you have a family with children, wife, parents even, and you don't have food to eat? Do you feel like a man when you're not able to provide for them? If a health crisis come up and you need money to take them to the hospital and none is there, how much can you stand? We were born in a land of violence. We've been victims of violence all our life. I mean, when we came into the world, what was the first thing they did to us as babies?
This is Daniel McGowan.
I guess I'll say I haven't yet seen in my years reading and studying social movements and history, I've never yet seen a successful or unsuccessful, for that matter, social movement that gains anything without some element of violence. That's just like, that's neither here nor there. It's just a fact. I mean, I think it factors into part of the mosaic of, you know, diversity of tactics. And I certainly, without even arguing about is property destruction violence, it's so 90s. I want to talk about that. I don't even care if it is, if it isn't, it's ultimately like, was there coercion and force? Absolutely. Do I regret that? No.
Want to pass another mic down, maybe?
Oh, it's working now.
Oh, it's the cord.
Yeah.
Got it. There we go.
This is John Tucker.
The acronym for the very, for the specific branch of Antifa that I was part of, it's Hoosier Anti-Racist Movement. It's named HARM. The reason violence is often viewed as the last act is because it is the last act. It gets results faster than any other form of political coercion. If that wasn't true, the police wouldn't have guns. You know, prisons wouldn't ban you from leaving at the threat of gunpoint. Like, every aspect of American life is held by violence. If you're issued a speeding ticket and you don't pay it, they issue a warrant for your arrest. If you resist, they will subdue you. If you resist further, they will shoot you. There is no law in this country. They will not kill you. Over. Like they said, violence is just the bread and butter of America. It's how this particular society runs. So yes, no regrets. And I respect a wide variety of tactics.
John, so as you talked before, and Stephanie in the introduction, you did your time for attacking a white supremacist meeting, and not just a white supremacist meeting, but a very specific white supremacist meeting in the Midwest, where there was a lot of different influential specific groups that had a lot of power in the white supremacist movement. Now, that was 2012, and here we're in 2016, and there's a rise in white supremacist groups. I was wondering what you see sort of moving forward, you know, if we've already seen a rise in the last couple of years in white supremacist groups, and what sort of inspires you now as to combating that?
As far as what inspires me to combat that currently, as I stated in my introduction, these people are a threat to me and my family. Not a philosophical threat, not a logistical threat. It's a legitimate threat. Living in Indiana, these white power organizations are common. They're more common in some areas, more so than others, but they recruit rampantly just based off of American politics, meth, heroin, and the incarceration system. The tools that they have at their disposal to recruit are ridiculous. As far as the inspiration to keep fighting, it's just the fact that if we lose this particular war, my family's gone. That's just it.
But more specifically, like, what tactics are you seeing now? What sort of activity are you seeing now that might be inspiring to you?
In Sacramento, a few months ago, there was an attempted rally by a few neo-Nazis. There was roughly, I believe it was no more than 20 of them, and they were met with a counter-protest force of, the news claimed, 400. That's fairly inspiring. Several of these Nazis were injured. Some of the counter-protesters were also injured. 400 people stood up to combat these people. I find that very inspiring.
So I want to go back just one question to the violence and three things. One is that I think we all know that violence begets violence and hurt people kind of hurt people. And I know that a lot of us are hurt people and not by our own hands per se all of the time and by this system a lot of the time. And the ability for us to deliver that violence to our oppressors at this moment specifically in the communities that I come from, are a little more daunting than they used to be in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I'll leave that there, but more importantly to me, has always been, and more now as our comrades get older, I hear some of them saying that they don't regret anything that they've done, but that the violence itself actually has a cyclical kind of effect, and that regardless of what our reasons, goals are, we have to find some restorative justice to help our comrades get back to whole after they fight for us in that style of violence. Or if they use violence in that way, we as a community have to know immediately that they need a certain level of restorative wholeness to come back to them. Because if we don't, then we have a person in our community that is hurt. We have a ton of people in our community that hurt, but we don't need our people coming home that we treasure like that, not properly cared for, not fixed. So I'm asking you guys, what do you see in reference to restorative justice for our people coming home?
This is Sekuo Kumbui.
What I see is a need for communities to reach out in understanding, compassion, empathy even, to those who have sacrificed their lives and energy and fighting to create a better world for all of us. If you've been incarcerated 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years, as has been said, I was incarcerated for 47 years. When you return to society, now as an elderly person, I'm no longer able or eligible for a job. Government gave me a fixed income and told me I couldn't go to jail, go get a job. If I did, they'd take the fixed income. So how do I survive? You know, my bills, utilities, rent, medical expenses hasn't changed one bit because of my status in this society as an ex-felon. I'm no less the human being than those who make those decisions to withhold those humane gestures. So what happens is that you and I in the community have to pool our resources and come together with a common understanding that these brothers and sisters returning home need support, need help, financially, physically, spiritually. They need encouragement. There's what is known as post-traumatic stress. Most people associate that with people in the military. But for some of you who don't know, ex-felons, ex-prisoners also suffer post-traumatic stress. So if they don't have someone to give them support, give them backup, encouragement, and a helping hand, they get depressed and despondent and said, I didn't have to suffer this while I was in prison. I got 3 meals a day, food, clothing, and shelter was provided. I didn't pay no water bill, no light bill, no gas bill. I didn't have to worry about transportation to get to the other side of the prison. So what the heck? What I need is for to keep going through all of this. And so a lot of people become statistics and return to prison, sometimes over nothing, and sometimes over committing something probably more stupid than it was before. But if the community shows some compassion, shows some heart, shows some forgiveness, help them get a job, provide them with jobs, give them support, make sure they got something to eat, make sure they got clothing to wear. I met teenagers in Houston, Texas, and that's what they do. They go around the community and get clothing donated so that when a fella get out of prison, they can provide him with clothes to wear. They go and talk to employees in the community and encourage them to be more receptive to allow individuals getting out of prison to have a job so that they can take care of themselves and their families. Be an asset to their communities. The answer resides within us, in your own heart, in your own mind. You don't need to search around the world, although there are some very good examples of how prisoners, so-called prisoners, I don't call them prisoners, I call them incarcerated people, are treated in other parts of the world far more differently, far more humanely than anything going on in America. But if those kind of conditions, those kind of situations, those kind of treatments, abuses, and disrespect for humanity changes, it has to begin with you and I. It has to begin with you and I.
This is Kazi Torrey.
I don't know, Russell, right? I don't know if it's really been built yet, but we're working on some things. We're working on trying to like put together like a farm, a situation where people coming out can like go there and, you know, reacclimate at a slower pace if they're off paper. You know, a lot of times people are still on paper and they won't get, you know, they have to stay in their particular jurisdiction, right? So they can't move. But those people that are wrapped up and it's off paper, we're trying to build this spot for them, for people to go to upstate New York. And we got like 100 acres right now. And we just got it last year. And we're trying to put it together, trying to make it work, you know, make money on it. It's, you know, leasing out some parts of it to other farmers until we can get our shit together. But we're doing that up there. I don't know if there's any other spots around the country where people are doing things, but, you know, I noticed that, like, when I got out, but the Puerto Ricans are doing it pretty good. You know, they like pairing people up with different lawyers or doctors and whatnot. When they come out, they'll pair them up with somebody, and that person will look out for them, you know, get them clothes and get them a car, get them, you know, stuff like that. But I don't know if we got any spots hooked up where people can go and chill out and, you know, get themselves back together before they step back in. And even people doing organizing a lot of times get burnt out, man, you know, need to take a couple of weeks off or a week off or something, you know, before they come back. We need those spots. We need to build those spots. And we're just thinking like farming and growing food. You get a different relationship with the earth too, you know, and digging your hands in the dirt and, you know, working the land. So that gives you, you know, something back, you know, after coming back from wars and battles and shit. But I think we need to like start trying to do that in other places around the country too.
That answer you?
Yes, that answer. I feel like this is, so much of this focus is on the past and the actions. I wonder, as individuals, I have two questions. Like, how do you take care of yourself at home, and how do you relax? And what's your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Can we?
This is Daniel McGowan.
I have a really hard time relaxing. Anyone in the room that knows me knows that I just go hard and I never stop and I just end up burning out short term. I've been trying to slow down, have nights where I'm offline. Like this weekend, I'm trying to stay off. Yeah, peanut gallery over here. Like this weekend, I was like telling people like, yo, I'm not gonna be in touch. And you know, I keep checking my phone and all that. But yeah, it's a real challenge because I think what I did was what people told me to avoid doing, which is thinking that this bit is your time out, your life's not actually going on, and then like you feel like you're just sitting there on the bench and you want to get into the game so bad and you just can't. All this stuff took place when I was gone, like it does for everyone's sentence. And you just want to get in, and what that did for me was as soon as I got out, I just was like, oh, just running crazy. And it's like 3.5 years later, and it's still kind of going a little frantic. But what do I do to relax? I'm working on that one. But I do have pistachio. It's my favorite ice cream.
This is Sekuo Kumbui.
I like orange sherbet. What do I do to relax? I'm a community activist, public speaker. I travel the country advocating those things that we're talking about here today. And that relaxes me. It gives me a sense of purpose, gives me a sense of meaning in my life. And it gives me an understanding about myself that those years I spent incarcerated teaching other young men how to be men, teaching other brothers how to prepare themselves to return to society and remain free without returning, becoming a statistic, creating organizations that allow their spirits to heal while they were still incarcerated so that they would be more open in their return to treat people with more respect, less violence. That's not really funny. No one wants to be a victim of violence, not even the one that's usually a perpetrator. But we live in a violent time. I mean, when I look at the news in Alabama, that's all they talk about. Somebody's committed some kind of crazy, foolish, stupid crime or violence. These days, the number one candidate for acts of violence is the very person who's supposed to be protecting us. Protecting us from ourselves. I thought that's what they said, protect and serve. And they're the ones we need to be protected from. But I get my relaxation by traveling around the country trying to inspire people like you to develop a better appreciation for who you are and what your role should be. Bringing home some human beings.
This is John Tucker.
There you go.
We'll go ahead and start off with strawberry. It's my personal favorite. As far as relaxing, I suppose I just bury my head in news article after news article after news article. I don't know if that really counts as relaxation. It's in the news, but it's what I do whenever I'm not physically breathing. So I suppose that's as close to relaxation as I come anymore.
This is Kazitori.
Oh. Wow. Well, the only thing that really gets me these days is my kids. I got 28-year-olds. I like hanging out with them, you know, in the woods, puffing on a split, hanging out. I like relaxing like that. You know? I scream all if you can.
Okay, I'm being told we have to wrap up so we can let the Whittier people go home. Thanks for all the people who put this together and to Whittier for hosting us and for all of you for coming. Thanks. And,
This has been the second half of the 2016 Former Political Prisoner panel from the North American Anarchist Black Cross Conference. For more information on the political prisoners in the United States, you can check out denverabc.wordpress.com or nycabc.wordpress.com.